Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Wednesday. We usually look at some of the industry news, talk to business leaders, and for today, we are happy to be talking to Gordon Thompson, who is the Vice President of Technology Acceleration at global tech company Cisco, and he's going to be talking to us about some of the big technology trends that may end up shaping the year to come. I think 2020, if there's anything that was apparent, was the high rate of digital adoption, and I think digitalization and digital transformation ended up being big buzzwords. But we're here to talk about what actually happened and where we are likely to go. So, Gordon, greetings to you.
Greetings to you as well. Pleasure to be joining you from Scotland. I can't say it's sunny, but it's still a pleasure to be joining you.
And we're definitely happy to have you on the platform, and especially given the fact that you do have sight on what's going on in those other parts of the world. I think just a good place for us to start is, maybe understanding, from your point of view, just a little bit about, your role at Cisco and what that actually entails before we get into the discussion around the trends.
By all means. So my role is Head of Technology Acceleration, and what that means is I'm here to advise our customers on how they can use technology, predominantly technology that they can embed in their organizations, 12 months to 36 months out. So, I'm not part of the sales organization who is out there actively selling our technology to our customers every day. I'm more looking at the vision, the strategy of how our customers can build that technology, that digitization strategy that they're ultimately going to adopt 12, 18 to 36 months out. So my role and my team's role is to help our customers think more longer term about how they can use technology to better effect in their businesses.
Now, I can imagine that in the role that you have, because you're talking about such long timelines, especially where the rate of technology is changing, the way that it does, that there must be some element of having to look inside a crystal ball in some ways. So from that point of view, when you look at some of the trends that did shape the pandemic period in 2020, would you say that any of the specific technologies that people ended up using during that time surprised you? Was it people using new technologies or perhaps using existing technologies just at a faster or larger scale?
I think it's the latter, and it did surprise me to a certain extent as well. It's the fact that the existing technologies were consumed at a rate that I don't think we or any of our customers thought they could consume those technologies at that sort of rate. Because it's not just about technology, consumption, it's about cultural change as well. I'll give you an example, for example, on healthcare. The amount of healthcare consultations that went virtual globally was phenomenal. We saw an average globally now telehealth going to around 46% consumption during the last year. Now, that was a movement from somewhere around 11%. So, this ability for people to change not just the way the technology they use, but to culturally change the way they operate is at the heart of it. It has been very much of a reaction up until now, I would say. People have been reacting and using the technologies that were available to them. They're now moving, customers are moving into a kind of reimagined phase now, which says, okay, we've made that shift much faster than we thought we were. How is our business going to evolve? How is our strategy going to evolve, recognizing that actually this hybrid way of working, it may not stay exactly the way it is, but, we're never going to go back to the way it was. So we're in a reimagined phase with most of our customers now thinking about how they're going to take advantage of all of these technologies post-pandemic and indeed continuing through the pandemic as well.
As you're talking, just highlighting some of the high rates of adoption and the fact that you know, people had this stuff sitting already and some people had already invested in these things. How much of that do you think actually stays, you know? Because I think one of the big questions, especially for people like yourself that have to look 12, 18, 24 months in advance, is how much of what we've seen, you know, now is actually going to remain with us as in a fundamental change to how we work, especially when all of the vaccinations and inoculations go through. It's now mid-2022. We've reached herd immunity. Do you see that rate of technology adoption having, you know, remained as is? And do you see the specific technologies that have been used, you know, people, you know, holding on to those?
I do. But I also see new innovations coming along. And I think we're now in a place where people will adopt those innovations faster, based on the changes we've seen over the last year or so. First of all, I think it's critical. It's critical for every organisation in every country to not take a step back. There was a recent study from PwC that says if we could bring everybody who is offline today online, we would add $6.7 trillion to the global economy. We would bring 500 million people out of poverty. So, there's never great news from a pandemic, but the great thing that has happened through the pandemic is people are adopting technology and there is more and more demand to make sure that everybody gets access to that technology. There's more pressure on governments to make sure we make those investments so that everybody has access to the technology and the digital divide disappears. So, I think it's critical for everybody, for every enterprise organisation, large and small, and for every government to not allow this to slip through our hands. We have to accept and adopt some of these new technologies that we'll probably talk about in a minute or two into our way of working, so that we can make improvements in education, improve GDP, make improvements in healthcare that we mentioned earlier on. These things all become critical, I believe, moving forward. So we can't take a step back.
So now that you've actually brought up the fact that that investment is necessary from both the private and public sector, what are those specific technologies that you think are actually going to be important in 2021?
Okay, let me jump into that for you. Now, I'd like you to, as I'm going through this, I'd like you to think about, you know, people in three different places. I'd like you to think about people in terms of people who are predominantly used to work in offices. I'd like you to think about people who are working who are not working in offices, and that's about 60% of the working population globally work, but they don't work in an office. And we have to think about how technology can have a positive impact on them as well. And then we have to think about how technology can just help society in general. So if you think about it in those kind of buckets, I'll try and give you an idea of some of the technologies that are coming along to help us. The first couple of technologies that are coming around are around high-speed connectivity. Okay, so today we operate in a mobile world with 4G. We're beginning to see mobile devices become 5G devices. And also the Wi-Fi technologies that we have and we use and we connect to today are also aligning around similar speeds as 5G with something called Wi-Fi 6. Now, we're getting to a place where technology will be, the consumption of these technologies will be 100 times faster than the technology consumption we have today. So when you start to think about that, the ability to do anything from a device will allow the world to transform massively. If you take that, for example, into healthcare, you can take it into things like virtual reality in terms of having, you know, those consultations with people without physical consultations, without actually being in the same physical location. So the first of these technologies that I think we'll get our heads around and starting to get our heads around is 5G and Wi-Fi 6. This really is the foundation to allow us to absorb any form of digitization in any environment. You know, socially, at home, from a business point of view, either in the office or indeed for those workers who are out working every day, the 60% of them who are out working on farms or who are out working, you know, in all sorts of other types of jobs. So that would be the first technology. The second technology is sensors. We're beginning to see sensors embedded into many different things we do, and sensors are going to have an impact in terms of helping people's well-being and helping the sustainability as well of our businesses and our employees. Now, let me give you a rugby example, first of all, for the audience, since I was going to say both countries are very passionate about rugby. We are, but South Africa are much better than Scotland. We've started, for example, in the mouthguards of rugby players. We can embed sensors now to be able to tell whether or not these rugby players have been concussed, right? So this is the level of innovation that we can take out of simple day-to-day technology where we can embed sensors into it. Now, sensors are going to be used much more to protect the well-being of our employees as we move forward. I'll spend a bit of time talking about that with you in a minute or two. But sensors are also going to be used significantly in telehealth. The ability for us to be able to monitor the well-being of individuals, maybe somebody who lives at home on their own or other individuals, is going to have a profound impact on how we keep our nation healthy moving forward. And the rise of sensors will absolutely be at the heart of everything that we're going to do. Now, I'll just comment for a minute or two around sensors in the workplace. You know, I'm working from home. I've been working from home for 9 months. My company doesn't really know if I'm working in a healthy environment. That healthy environment should be around my ambient temperature, my ambient lighting, how often I'm sitting at my desk, how often I'm moving about to make sure I stay active. All of these sorts of technologies are being embedded into the PCs and the video technologies that we're using, and are going to be embedded into the offices as we move forward as well. So sensors will have a profound impact as we move forward. I'll give you one other area just now, then we can stop for more dialogue. But ultimately, as we embed more of this technology, we better make sure it's secure. Okay, and the final area of where we're moving to is a world called zero trust. Okay, zero trust means that ultimately you don't trust anybody. Technology doesn't trust anybody. And we have to go through a series of gates that allow us to gain access. Now, that is also going to take a biometric view of the world moving forward to make sure that it actually is only you that gets access to the resources that you're allowed to get access to. So just to recap, very high speed connectivity coming from all for all, which is going to change the game massively in terms of the way we engage. Rise in sensors that's going to have a profound impact on our well-being and our safety as we move forward. And finally, you know, much more embedded and easy to use security, but security that is built on a zero trust approach. Those would be three areas, I think, that we're going to see significant evolution of over the next 12 to 18 months in enterprise customers, in the business world, but you're actually going to see it creep into the social world as well, and the sporting world, with the example I gave you earlier on as well. So those would be three areas to kick us off.
You know, the sensors, I'd say something that seems quite interesting. And I like the fact that you've already, you know, touched on the security bit. I know that, you know, Cisco is one of the biggest cybersecurity companies in the world. So this is probably something that, you know, as a company, you guys are constantly having to grapple around. But as a follow-up, I wanted to maybe get your thoughts around the greater privacy debate and where you see you know, things going, because there is that tension that does happen between the more useful that technology can be or is to people and the greater convenience that it does offer. There seems to be that quote-unquote trade-off where you do have to allow a smartphone, a tablet, a fridge, a smartwatch, a mouth guard in the case of the rugby example that you gave, to be collecting certain amounts of data about yourself. And in the last couple of weeks, obviously, the issue with WhatsApp and all of that stuff has really shown that this is an issue that consumers are thinking about. So, you know, from your view, how do you see enterprises specifically, you know, at least making sure that as they produce more value for consumers, that they're able to at least allay the fears that consumers might have about, the information that's gathered for them versus the convenience that the technology is providing to them?
Yeah, absolutely. Ultimately, it comes with choice, okay? And the end user has to have that ability to choose. Now, in the working environment, the organization has the ability to collect macro data. You know, so rather than say, for example, a particular employee is not working in a safe or an environment that's conducive to their well-being, you can create macro data without actually breaking privacy concerns. So the organization gets trending data. You know, they get to see that, 22% of their employees are working in environments that are not conducive. In that basis, they can then start to push better learnings and other information out to their employees to watch the trend hopefully improve over time, that 22% reduced to 18% and so on. So although the organization is collecting data, we can collect data in such a way that it isn't specific to any one employee, and we can still make use of that data. In the social world that we operate in, personalized experiences, we believe, are certainly something that every single one of us is going to want more of as we move forward, especially as we engage digitally and even when we engage physically as well. And, I think, we'll see the cultural shift as people become more and more familiar with the fact that, security becomes more and more robust. And it becomes, to a point where, people can feel that they can trust that data. We're going to see people want that data to be used to personalize the experience as they engage, with any organization that they engage with, be it, a retail environment that you engage with, be it, your utility company that you engage with, be it whoever. Ultimately, people do want more personalized experiences. And for that retailer or for that utility company, if you can improve the personalized experience to your customers, fundamentally, you create more loyalty over time. So there is always a trade-off, and there will always be choice for the end user. That choice will never disappear for the end user. The world is not going to change that way. However, metadata is going to help every organization make better decisions in the longer term. And that metadata does not need to be specific about any one individual. So, I want people to recognize that they shouldn't be concerned about, people watching their every move. That isn't the reality of the situation. The metadata is collected and used in different ways to drive business benefit than just saying, this is what this employee is doing right at this minute in time.
I certainly hope that, those listening can take, some of those words, to at least, calm our minds that we aren't creating some type of a big brother state, wherever they are in the world. But perhaps moving on, one of the things that COVID-19 really did was the fact that, around the world, we saw people using technology in similar ways and certain types of companies prospering over others around the world. People were getting on video conferencing, telehealth, the example that you gave earlier on around the world was something that was on the rise. We were all streaming more, entertainment, all of that. But are there any trends that you think are specific to particular regions, or for the most part, do you see trends being universal, just given the fact that we are all going through the same pandemic?
So I think there will be certainly variations across various different regions, right? Because some parts of the world have a higher office working population than other parts of the world. You know, some parts of the world have higher manufacturing output than other areas. So all of these things will have an impact. I think the key thing, however, to recognise is the world will remain a hybrid working environment. You know, the days of everybody having to be in the office every day are probably gone forever. The days of every meeting being a physical meeting are probably gone forever. And, you know, we have to make sure that the technology we innovate around makes that hybrid environment as seamless as possible. You know, we have to deliver an experience to everybody that is completely immersive, that doesn't even recognize the fact that not everybody is in the same room at the same time, but everyone can still engage in the exact same way. And, you know, for us, we are setting out a strategy that says we want to make the experience in the hybrid world 10 times better than the experience that's in person. Just think about that. You know, you and I have a physical meeting face to face, and I'm saying I want to make the fact that when we engage virtually, the experience is 10 times better. Now, there's a few things that we're doing there to try and help make sure we can do things like that. So, you know, for example, we are doing things like, you know, auto translation on video conferencing now. So if you've got a global meeting and people are joining that don't speak specific language, auto translation, providing closed captioning for those who are digitally impaired to help them understand what's going on in the meeting. Producing things like noise cancellation capabilities in our technology so that when the dog is barking, when the postman arrives, you don't hear these sorts of things. Being able to share your presentation in the background behind you so that it's a more immersive experience. You know, all of these sorts of things are coming together. We're getting to a point as well where when you walk into a meeting room, you know, it's going to know it's you walking into the meeting room and why you're walking into that meeting room. It's going to know that you're going to be using the video conferencing unit to connect to somebody else, and it will automatically connect you to that person. It's going to know the ambient temperature and the ambient lighting that you like specifically, and it's going to adjust accordingly to meet your requirements. These are all the things that we're doing with sensors and with innovation in our technology to try and make sure that, you know, that the hybrid world is a really fantastic world to operate in. So we're not going to forget about the physical building. We're still going to improve things there, and we can talk about that in a minute or two. But we're also going to spend a lot of time really focusing on that hybrid world to make it a really phenomenal experience for people moving forward. And today, it's more about connectivity today. It's not about that immersive, phenomenal experience. But this is where we're going.
You know, as you're talking about, you know, some of the things that you guys are doing, I'm just picturing, you know, this type of world that you're talking about. And as one of the big technology companies in the world, I can imagine that there is that pressure of trying to at least decide, you know, how do we best use the technology to create, you know, a hybrid working environment that's, you know, magnitudes better than meeting in person or purely on a virtual basis. So from that point of view, when it comes to your thinking as Cisco and some of these developments, are you developing, you know, first for, you know, internally to say, okay, cool, if this can work for us, then it can work for our clients? Or do you find that the development process has been a client needs led sort of process?
So it's a bit of both. I think first and foremost, we like to eat our own dog food, or as somebody said to me earlier on today from South Africa, we like to drink our own champagne. So we certainly like to be able to embrace and use our technology internally. And, you know, our harshest critics in terms of our capabilities are our own employees in terms of what the technology needs to do. But we're very customer driven in terms of our innovation, you know, and we get feedback from all different levels, all different types of customers in terms of how our technology can drive better outcomes for our customers. Fundamentally, innovation has to be business outcome driven. There's no point in creating innovation for innovation's sake. It has to solve problems. So we are very focused on working closely with our customers to get their feedback in terms of how technology can work better. But then we do drink our own champagne, certainly, in terms of testing that technology internally and then rolling it out to our customers so that they get maximum impact.
You know, in actually drinking your own champagne, as we end off the discussion, given all the negativity that is, you know, in the world when it comes to technology and the things that you are working on specifically, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the impact that cloud can have in the world for all of us today. Cloud is going to allow, it's going to make it easier for everybody to be able to engage with family, with friends, and with all of the companies that you need to engage with on a daily basis to live your life. And our ability to, you know, work closely with all of these cloud providers to make it easier for people to gain access to applications and capabilities that help them do their live their life easier and do their job more easily is probably the thing that excites me most in terms of the journey that we're going on over the next 12 to 18 months, I think. However, innovation is moving faster than it has ever moved at before. Investment in innovation is, you know, the investment into innovation has never been stronger across the IT sector to try and help make sure our customers take advantage of this hybrid world. So although I give you ideas in terms of where the technology is going over the next 12 to 18 months, you know, I'd love to speak to you again in 12 months' time to see exactly how much more radical innovation is coming along to help our customers on an even more exciting journey in the longer term. But certainly cloud is going to have a significant impact in terms of, I'll leave you with this thought. The last decade was about delivering customer satisfaction. This decade is absolutely going to be about delivering customer delight. And it's going to be technology that does that.
This decade is going to be about delivering customer delight. Those are the words of Gordon Thompson, who is joining us from Scotland. He is the Vice President of Technology Acceleration for Europe, Middle East, Africa and Russia at global technology firm Cisco, giving us some insight into what the last year has been in terms of technology adoption and some of the trends that he's seeing in the coming year. Also, just a little bit around, you know, some of the region-specific technologies, because he's just highlighting the fact that there are certain things that are going to be, you know, the same across the board, but at the same time, the makeup of economy, some are more manufacturing-led, some have, you know, greater tertiary industries and more, you know, office-led, you know, economies, and all of those things, you know, come into effect. Also talking about the fact that they have had to constantly sit and adopt, you know, their own technologies and develop for their own technologies internally, whilst at the same time catering to some of their clients. And just ending off talking about the fact that where the last decade has been about customer satisfaction, the next is going to be about customer delight. Gordon, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
A very fascinating discussion with Gordon. You know, thank you so much to him for availing himself, you know, the time zones and all of that stuff. But it's just good to see, and I can imagine, you know, because you can tell this is someone who's very clued up about what's going on in and around technology, the amount of information he must be reading and watching to understand what's going on in and around the world, and especially given the timelines that they are looking out for, you know, a year, 2-3 years down the line, what's the world going to be looking like? But for me, one of the big takeaways is that issue around, you know, increased sensors. And this is an important discussion that we need to be having in society, because for the most part, especially on the consumer part, I think what Gordon said about the control that enterprises have over their specific environments sort of speaks to the control that they have. But for, you know, consumers who are consuming the products that companies are, you know, constantly innovating to create, there is that debate about where does privacy begin and where does privacy end, and where does the convenience and the value that consumers get versus, you know, where information is taken advantage of. And obviously, this issue with the WhatsApp update and the terms is something that's really brought it to the fore. And at the same time, we just hope that as consumers, stay safe out there and just know what's actually happening, but also just recognizing the fact that there is a price to pay for the convenience that technology does bring with it. And technology has been able to do so many great things for us, but you know, key is to make sure that you stay safe and that, you know, you just exercise your rights and actually know what's going on. And then the other one is also just that region specific issue. Yes, there are things that are universal, but the nature of certain economies is different. And we just hope that going forward, that technology can actually be used to help us to claw back the losses that have been made in South Africa and other countries by the pandemic, so that a year from now, when we talk to someone like Gordon, we can be having a much more positive conversation. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.